Welcome to episode 436 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard, and this is the show where we talk about Microsoft Entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms. We are back from CES, but unfortunately, Richard couldn't be here tonight. I think that's going to be okay because, you know, it's the week after CES, so there's not a ton of news, but a few things to catch up on that we either missed last week or have come out since then. If you want to send us some feedback for a future episode, you can do that by shooting us a message at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. We don't have any feedback from our previous couple of episodes. We will jump right into the news tonight. And let's start with a very common place for us to start, and that would be Plex news. Yep, Plex was updated on the Xbox One in the last few days. And some of these things I was able to directly test, but some of them not so much. So their bullet points say that they have brand new audio, video, and photo players. So this would be the actual code that's running underneath that actually plays back your audio and video and photos and stuff like that. Everything seemed fine to me, but I wasn't having issues before, so I don't really notice a difference here. Maybe I'm just not observant enough, or maybe it's only really noticeable if you were having issues or if you've been trying to play back some of these other types of formats, which are also listed, because they now support direct streaming for HEVC video. This is a new-ish codec. This is more for used more commonly for 4K video. So if you've got an Xbox One S or an Xbox One X, then this one would apply to you. Their notes also say support for MSPEG 4v2 and 4v3 in both MKV and AVI containers. They say that this is also for 4K video with VP9 support inside of WebM containers. So I don't know where that sort of content is coming. WebM is, as you might tell from the name, a container that's designed for playing back video natively in the browser. I believe, if memory serves me correctly, WebM was actually developed by Google as an open standard for supporting higher resolution video like 4K video to work on the web. So if you've got some of those types of videos that you weren't able to play, at least not with direct streaming, and just a quick recap, direct streaming means nothing needs to be transcoded. If you've got video like this and your client, in this case your Xbox, can support it via direct streaming, then there's very little work for the server to do. It doesn't have to convert that video to something else. And that also means that you're going to get the highest possible quality out of that video. Now, one thing that I did notice is in their notes, it says they've got new modals. That just means like a pop-up screen for play version, mark as watched, and delete. Now, I don't know if these three always existed and these are just new designs, or if some or all of these are in fact new. I know that previously I wasn't able to find the play version option inside of the Xbox One app. And when I saw these notes, I went looking and I did find it. So what this is useful for is if you have, let's say in my case, I had a couple of versions of some TV episodes. So when you're looking at it in your library, it would have a little blue icon in the corner of the episode that would say a number like 2. So maybe you've got 2 versions of it. Well, if you just click play, it's just going to play the version that it thinks it should play, but maybe you want to pick a specific one. So to do this on the Xbox, go to that specific episode, and at the top left of the screen, you're going to see the giant thumbnail that's a preview image of what that episode is. And below that, there are 3 dots. If you click that, that is where these options show up. So play version, mark as watched or mark as unwatched if you've already watched it. Delete and a few other things all show up in there. And if you select play version, it'll give you a nice handy list of the different versions that you have, including what resolution they're running at. So it's really nice to have. Maybe you've got a TV show that you recorded and it's got commercials, but you've also got a version that you've ripped the commercials out of and transcoded it into, say, H.264 in an MPEG 4 container so that it doesn't have to be transcoded at all. You could select that one to make sure that you're A, not watching the commercials because you cut them out, and B, not having to do any transcoding. So it's just going to make everything work a little bit better for you. So that's one thing that I'm excited to see in this new update. But there is one thing that some users have noticed isn't working anymore, and that is Kinect voice commands. If you are used to yelling at your Kinect to play and pause and things like that, well, that doesn't work anymore, apparently. Now, I've got a Kinect, and we used to do that sort of thing a lot, but no one in my family does this anymore. Like, our Kinect is basically unused at this point. So maybe you're in the same spot, but if not, well, I'm sorry to tell you that Kinect voice commands seem to be gone in the latest version of the Plex app. Next up is a story that we didn't cover in last week's CES episode, and that is that NVIDIA had an odd thing that I don't think most people were expecting. I would say on display, but it wasn't actually. We went by the NVIDIA booth, and the vast majority of their booth were closed meeting rooms, and the rest of it was just car stuff. Well, apparently what they were showing in those closed meeting rooms were crazy new gaming displays, new monitors. They're calling these BFGDs. That stands for Big Format Gaming Displays. And boy, are they big. We are talking about a 65-inch 4K display with HDR and G-Sync because, hey, these are NVIDIA displays. G-Sync, again, is a technology that will allow the refresh rate of the display to match up with the signal that it's receiving. This is really, really important. For gaming, it means that you can run interesting, you know, and by interesting, I mean not 60 frames per second, you know, different frame rates and not get screen tearing. Because if you've got a monitor that only will display at 60 hertz and you're running content at 75 frames per second or something like that, then it needs to do some extra math and calculations to try and make all of that match up. And it just can't. The math doesn't work out evenly in most situations. And when that happens, you'll notice what looks like the screen tearing. It's really annoying if you notice it. And these G-Sync displays, they just make the display refresh at the correct rate so that you never get any tearing. And it's really nice. Also, because these are gaming-focused displays, they're super low latency. They weren't giving actual specs, but you can expect that these numbers are really, really low, single-digit milliseconds in terms of latency would be my guess. They are 120 hertz displays. They have full-array dimming, which is awesome. In terms of HDR, they're saying 1,000 nits peak brightness. That's really bright. That's really bright. That's better than my Vizio M series from last year. They also, because they're working with NVIDIA directly, and because they're probably going to be $1 billion anyway, have all of the capability of an NVIDIA Shield TV box built right in. So if you were thinking of getting an NVIDIA Shield TV, you don't need to, because that $200 device, it's already built in to the display itself. Now, who's making these? It's not NVIDIA directly, much like the video cards. You don't normally buy a video card straight from NVIDIA. And in this case, you won't buy these displays straight from NVIDIA either. They're being produced by ASUS, Acer, and HP, which is somewhat interesting because none of those manufacturers manufacture displays that are this large. They make computer displays, and computer displays aren't this big. But NVIDIA wants you to use them as computer monitors, not TVs. These aren't designed for the living room. And I don't really know what that means. I wish we could have gotten to speak with NVIDIA, because if it's low latency, it's 4K, it's HDR, it's got a high refresh rate, it's got tons of peak brightness, it's got full array dimming, why wouldn't I want a display like this in my living room? I'm not really sure if I want to play games in my living room and watch great movies in my living room. I'm not really sure why this wouldn't be meant for the living room. And who's got room for a 65-inch TV on their computer desk? Probably just about nobody. Well, either way, I think that these displays are really exciting, really interesting, and theoretically, they should be coming out this summer. Now, that's a CES-given time frame, so take that with a grain of salt. It might not actually be this summer. It might be more like this coming winter. You never know. You really never know with dates given at CES, especially to products that they're not even actually showing to the public. So we'll see, but I'm very excited to see where this technology is going. Moving on to some gaming news. This just hit today. I'm recording this on Tuesday the 16th. It looks like we may be in store for a new version of the Xbox Elite controller. There were some images posted on Baidu, which is a Chinese site, and good luck reading most of this site because it's almost entirely in Chinese, but it looks like a new version of the Xbox Elite controller, which was released about 2 years ago now. This one looks to have some pretty nice improvements. It looks to use USB-C for charging, and if that wasn't cool enough, there's also rumors that it's going to have a case that you can put it inside when you're not using it, and it'll just charge the controller while it's in the case. It makes me think of all of these fancy new wireless Bluetooth earbuds, you know, the ones that are truly wireless, sort of like AirPods, but, you know, less Apple-y, you know, something like that. It'll also have Bluetooth. That absolutely makes sense. Every Xbox One controller that has come out since the Elite was released has Bluetooth support, but the regular Elite doesn't. And Bluetooth support means you can pair it up with a Windows 10 PC. So that's really nice. Can't wait to see that. There's also apparently going to be 3-level trigger locks. What I think that means is the triggers, you know, right trigger, left trigger, would have 3 different positions that you could set to have them lock in at so that you could only push them so far in, which is just effectively reducing the throw on the button so that you don't have to push quite so far for it to register that you've pushed it, which generally means you can push it faster. So that can be really useful for games like first-person shooters. They're also supposed to be adding longer travel on the paddles. Those are the extra buttons that are on the bottom of it. And they're also saying that it's going to have a 3-profile switch. What I think that means is that you could configure all of the buttons to do a bunch of things for one game, say Call of Duty, and then change them to something else completely different for Forza Motorsports. And you could easily switch between them by just assigning them to these different profile switch positions so that you don't have to go in and remap all of the buttons every time you switch games. It's just switching an option on a switch on the controller. So that would be really nice for scenarios like that too. It looks like they're also going to get slightly different thumbsticks. And by that, I really mean the part that your thumb doesn't touch, the vertical part that is holding it to the controller and holding it up in the air. Those look all shiny and metallic. And there's also a rumor that they would have adjustable tension. Some people find the tension on the Xbox One sticks to be lacking, that they want it to be a little bit stiffer to push, which would perhaps allow you to be a little bit more precise. I think one thing that most people who currently own an Xbox Elite controller are hoping for is that the grips on the back will stay on a little better. That's a really common complaint, that those wear down or just come off entirely. Another common thing that I've seen online is that the bumpers will break and just come off. So I would fully expect that the next version of the Xbox Elite controller would absolutely be manufactured better and be longer lasting than the current version. We're talking about a premium controller here. The regular Xbox One controllers retail for $60. The Xbox Elite controller is $150. So you don't just expect more functionality. You want more quality too. And certainly not everybody is experiencing all these problems, but enough people have been to make some people worry and not want to purchase the $150 controller if they're concerned that it's going to break. So when can we expect to get actual confirmation of this? There's two possibilities. There are two conferences coming up soon. One is in March. It's called the Game Developers Conference, or commonly referred to as just GDC. The other one is E3 in June. I think it's a lot more likely that we would get this announcement at E3. This is kind of a big deal. It would probably be Microsoft's biggest hardware announcement of the year for Xbox. So I don't think they're going to announce that at GDC, which is kind of a small deal. E3 is the big deal when it comes to making gaming announcements. So that's where I would expect this device to get announced. Well, let's move on to this week's deals with gold and spotlight sale. And there are a couple of obvious ones to hit on here. There are a bunch of Far Cry games and Grand Theft Auto 5, plus a bunch of DLC and things like that for sale for those. But everything else, this almost feels like a story player's sale. A bunch of games that are on sale, we've either already played for our Story Players podcast here at the DMZ, or our games that we're probably going to play in the second season, which is coming up next month. Dear Esther, the first walking simulator ever, basically, is on sale for $4. Firewatch, another great game, it's half off at $10. Inside is down to $10. Tacoma is $10, and that's a Play Anywhere game. We did play that in season one of Story Players. The other game that's on sale that we played in season one of Story Players is What Remains of Edith Finch. That's available for $13.39. And one game that is definitely on our list to play soon is called The Sexy Brutal, and that is half off at only $10. So hurry up and purchase any of those that sound interesting to you, especially those for season two of Story Players, so that you can play them with us, because these deals with gold only last for a week. So these deals will expire before Tuesday the 23rd. So don't waste any time picking those up. If you don't want to spend any money, though, of course, there's Xbox Live Games with Gold. And in January, all month long on Xbox One, you can get The Incredible Adventures of Van Helsing 3. We're also into the second half of January now, so you can get Zombie, that's spelled Z-O-M-B-I. Doesn't really matter how it's spelled. Just go to the Xbox and select the Xbox Live Games with Gold section to get it. And then on the 360 side, Army of Two. And again, 360 games that are part of Games with Gold, they're always backwards compatible. So if you've only got an Xbox One at this point, you can still pick these up and play them on your Xbox One. So only one more piece of news here, and this is Microsoft news. I got a message from a listener named Chris who pointed out something that seems to be going on with Cortana on the Xbox One. Now, he's in the beta ring, so I wasn't seeing this on my One X, which is not running insider previews, but in the beta ring, he was able to see settings in Cortana for controlling other things like smart home devices. So if you've got Insteon or SmartThings or other things that can be controlled by, say, a Harman Kardon Invoke, then they might start working soon. And I haven't seen this reported anywhere else. Again, I haven't been able to test this myself, so I'm waiting to see more information from Chris or just to be able to do it myself. But it looks like Microsoft may finally be making it so that the Xbox can handle all of the Cortana type things that a Harman Kardon Invoke can do. And frankly, I expected that this is what they would do when the Invoke came out, or at the very least, when the Fall Creators update landed on the Xbox, and they didn't. And it just didn't make any sense to me. Now, what did start to make sense to me was the announcement a few weeks ago that Microsoft would no longer be producing the Kinect adapter for the Xbox One. I mean, it basically seems like, for all intents and purposes, Microsoft is completely giving up on the Kinect. We don't see Kinect games anymore. We see Kinect functionality decreasing seemingly with every new release of the Xbox One software. It just kind of seems like they're giving up on it. But this is a use case that absolutely makes sense. There are millions of Xbox Ones in people's living rooms. And while certainly not all of them, not even the majority of them, I would guess, have a Kinect hooked up to them, plenty of them do. And being able to use your Xbox as a smart device with Cortana as the assistant would be really beneficial to a lot of people for some things. Now, as we said last week, and as I've said in my Harman Kardon Invoke review and in various other places, Cortana is just not as useful as some of the competing voice assistants, but there is certainly a use case for it. There are some uses that a lot of people would get use out of. I mean, I definitely liked being able to control my Insteon lights with it. It is certainly nice to be able to access your calendar and appointments and things like that. You just don't have the breadth of abilities that, say, Amazon's assistant or Google assistant have on them. And we just don't see that expanding nearly as quickly as it needs to keep up with the competition. So we'll keep an eye on that. And if that does indeed happen, we will, of course, let you all know. So keep an eye out on that if that's something that you want to do with your Xbox One and if you still have your Kinect hooked up to it. Hopefully, if this is actually what they're doing, they're going to allow you to do it with webcams or with headsets connected to your controllers, which, you know, a headset connected to your controller is maybe not the best use case for Cortana, at least in general use cases, but if you want to do it while you're gaming, it makes sense. So we'll keep an eye on that and hope for the best with Cortana on the Xbox One. In terms of what's going on in our entertainment centers, it's been kind of a weird, crazy week for me. Obviously, last week I was traveling for CES, and on the flight out there, I did get to watch some videos. The flight back, no way. I was busy writing articles for all of you to check out. But on the way out there, I watched 3 episodes of season 3 of Mr. Robot. And man, oh man, does that show just keep getting more and more interesting. Absolutely love that show and can't wait to finish season 3. In terms of gaming, didn't really play anything new once I finally got home and back to my Xbox. It was really just more NHL, some PUBG, a little bit of Overwatch, and some Rainbow Six Siege. All very common go-to games for me, depending on who it is that I'm online and playing with. But I also did some other things. They're not necessarily media-related, but in some ways they are. So I decided that I'm going to switch out my network at home. The eventual plan is to switch to a Ubiquiti Unify system. I don't have a giant home by any means, but I would like to be able to have better Wi-Fi coverage all through my house and then all the way out to my backyard and garage. And the problem is that my Wi-Fi router is at the front of my house, so it's as far as possible from my backyard and my garage. It's also really far from the, you know, the back of the house where the kitchen is, or, you know, the back of the house in the basement is where the laundry is. And, you know, I like to watch TV shows while I'm folding laundry and things like that. And that's not always doable when your laundry is on a separate floor and as far away as possible from your Wi-Fi access points. So that's what I'm looking at doing. I've been using the Allman 3. I'm moving on from that. So the intermediate step was to just switch to the Wi-Fi that's built into my modem and router. Now, I have AT&T UVerse, so that's all one device. I'm hoping that it's going to be pretty reliable. I don't know if it will be yet. I just did all of this work yesterday, and wow, changing over your wireless access points, what a hassle. It is so much work when you have so many Wi-Fi devices. Obviously, we've got our phones, a couple of tablets. We've got, four Google Home related devices. There's just a ton. And I was changing the name of the wireless network too, so it meant changing all of that stuff everywhere. Changing your Google Home devices to a different wireless network is a giant pain in the butt. And I'm going to have to do it all again. Well, maybe not, because when I get the Ubiquiti system, then I'll just leave the network name the same and just turn it off on the AT&T router. So anyway, I did all of that. I was also busy using my NVIDIA Shield TV. I talk about this device a lot, as yet another server, basically, in my home. So it's been, I've talked about this a bunch, I've been using it as my Plex server, and it's doing a really great job of handling that. It also runs the HD Home Run DVR for me. It's just a really solid little box. Well, a couple of months ago, Samsung released a SmartThings hub in the form of a USB dongle specifically for the NVIDIA Shield TV. And they had it for super cheap when they first released it. You could pre-order it for $15, which seemed like a no-brainer. So I did it. And yesterday, I finally got around to setting that up. So this is also my first time playing with SmartThings. Now, I know I'm getting into the territory of Home On here, and we'll probably cover this more in Home On, because I'm going to be on the next episode of that too, to recap CES. But so far, liking SmartThings. This setup went really, really easy, and it's worked out really, really well. So just another thing that you can do with the NVIDIA Shield TV. And then one more thing that I'm doing with the NVIDIA Shield TV. I was sitting in my living room a few days ago and thought, this NVIDIA Shield does, in terms of video streaming and all that stuff, all the same things that my Xbox does, but it uses less power. It costs a lot less money. You know, it's a $180 device compared to a $500 Xbox One X. Why don't I see if my family likes using this device so that my Xbox One isn't getting used quite so much? So all I really had to do to make that happen was tell them, instead of pushing this button on the Harmony remote, press this button on the Harmony remote. And they were able to very quickly figure out how to use the NVIDIA Shield TV. And frankly, I think for people who are brand new to using, you know, a new smart streaming box, NVIDIA Shield TV, it's an easier interface than an Xbox One because it's designed for these types of apps. The Xbox One isn't. They've completely changed the user interface on that thing multiple times since its initial launch. I would say that when the Xbox One first came out, it was far more friendly for just casual app usage. You know, if you just want to jump into Netflix and Amazon and Hulu and things like that, it's just easier to find that stuff on an NVIDIA Shield than it is the Xbox One, because when you fire up the Xbox, the top third of the screen, really the entire home screen, is filled with gaming stuff. If you want to get down to pins and things like that, you have to arrow down, and you might not even see them right away. So NVIDIA Shield TV, I think, a little bit easier to use. And if you hate the way that the Plex app works on Xbox One now, if you don't like that new navigation bar where it's all at the top and you have to press up and stuff, well, on the NVIDIA Shield TV, it works a lot like the way the Plex app used to work on the Xbox One. It's not the same. It's definitely not the same, but it's pretty simple to use. So gonna keep trying that out and getting feedback from my family, but so far, no real complaints with the NVIDIA Shield TV. Well, that's everything that's going on in my entertainment center. If you'd like to get a hold of us, there are a bunch of ways you can do that. We're on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard, and the website is at DigiMediaZone. That's D-I-G-I MediaZone. Facebook is facebook.com/thedmz. I've mentioned our two other podcasts already. Richard's is Home On, covering the latest smart home technology. He has an episode out right now with Megan Woolerton from CES. That was a nice recap episode of what we saw in 2017. And they also made some predictions about what they might see at CES 2018. It's kind of fun to listen to those types of episodes after the event that they're making predictions about, because then you get to find out if they were right or not. So check out that episode of Home On if you haven't already. And then my other podcast is Story Players. I record that show with Joe D'Estasio. We are currently in between seasons. We're doing seasons of Story Players, the podcast about story-driven video games. But our plan is to release the next episode. This will be the first one in season two at the beginning of February. And if you want to get started on the game, it's only a two-hour game. You won't need much of a head start, but the first episode will be for the game Virginia. And then come back and check out Entertainment 2.0 when we record it live. This one wasn't live. We weren't live at CES because that would have been really difficult. But normally we're live on Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. We always tweet about it when we're going to be going live. Also, if you just follow us on Mixer, then you'll get notified as soon as we start streaming. So there's no reason to ever miss an episode of Entertainment 2.0 Live, and you can join the chat room and be a part of the show while it's happening. Hope to see you there next week. That's going to do it for episode 436. I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.